Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Happy Monday. This is Gray Eye Smith, and you're listening to The Garden of Enlightenment with Louie Wildove. Unfortunately, Louie Wildove isn't able to host the show due to being under the weather. So tonight's show is based on a contest that Louie Wildove and myself ran, and it's called your best haunted haunting home. And so that's tonight's show. And we are a group on All Poetry called Late Night Poets that provide these shows. We also have anthologies available on Amazon.com, so feel free to check those out. They're filled with poetry from around the world, and they help support these shows. So if you wouldn't mind, check those out. And I'm going to go to the phone lines here and see if we have any callers. Ooh, we do. Hi, Pam.
Hey, Gray, how's it going?
It's going good. Doing good. Thank you.
Awesome.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to an awesome night of spooky poetry and hauntings and hanging out with you and, of course, other cool poets.
Absolutely. Thank you, Pam. Okay, I'm going to bring on Laurent here. Hello, Laurent. Welcome to the show.
Well, good evening on this spooky, spectacular Monday. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Spooky.
Yeah. I'm going to grab the next caller here. Welcome to the show, Bobby.
Good evening.
How are you tonight?
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I'm channeling Vincent Price and Boris Karloff, so we'll see how it turns out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, awesome. Thank you for calling in. Okay, let's get the show on the road. Post this first link, if you wouldn't mind, please, Pam.
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. All right. There we go. A Telling by Gottlieb. And it goes like this. Douse the fire and snuff the candle. Only moon can sing this tale. Spilling beams in shivery stillness. Even birds and beasties quail. Not a murmur in the forest, save her silver liquid voice, recanting such tales of terror. Soul shrink from her woeful noise. Witness of the generations, she narrates man's evil deeds, quakes beneath her retribution on this cheerless hallow's eve. Blood wars and devastation, enmity for one's own flesh, hear her howl of lamentation for devices that enmesh. Douse the fire and snuff the candle, moon elucidates darkness. Strident shafts of revelation pierce the soul. She seeks redress. And poem.
That was a beautiful read, Pam. And, you know, this is a bit of a haunting poem for sure. Witness of the generation, she narrates man's evil deeds, quake beneath her retribution on this cheerless Hallow's Eve. Yeah, just brilliant. What did you think, Lauren?
I was mightily impressed by it. First of all, I like the title, A Telling. Very simple, slightly antiquated in the way it's voiced. I love the rhyming throughout this, but this is a tale. Well, only moon can sing this tale, and I get the impression that the best stories are the ones that the moons can sing, because the moon has seen everything tonight. There are no secrets from her. Not a murmur in the forest, save her silver liquid voice, recanting such tales of terror. Souls shrink from her woeful noise. Written 11 years ago, this thing seems and sounds, at least to me, fresh and new. Enjoyed it a great deal.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lauren. And Bobby, what did you think?
I was very impressed that she referenced a little-known quote. But it's a formula for laying a curse on someone. And the expression alludes to the closing words of the rite of excommunication, which is do the book, quench the candle, ring the bell, meaning that the service book is closed, the candle is snuffed, and the passing bell is rung as a sign of spiritual death. So the way she wove that into her poem, I thought, was quite clever and stylish, and I was very glad to see that arcane reference in there, because I've always enjoyed it. Plus the fact that it's a kick-ass movie with Jimmy Stewart and Kim Novak and Ernie Kovacs.
Cool. I appreciate your comment, Bobby. Thank you so much. Okay, so the next poem's up, Lauren, if you wouldn't mind, please.
All right.
You have a caller, Gray.
Oh, thank you.
Yep, sorry.
Thomas. One sec, Lauren.
Hello,
welcome to the show. Thomas, how are you?
Good to see you all, or hear you all.
Good to see you as well. Thank you for calling in. All right, anytime you're ready, Lauren.
All right, this is by Randa Yosri. It's called Spotless Mind. A child was taken hold of by a dark force entity, a globule of black smoke monster from the abyss, a shapeshifter bent on consuming her essence. Her innocence opened the door for possession. When he walked in, a cold tremor invaded her. Felt she should have been the perfect target, racked with a train of torturing, piercing thoughts with his high, taunting growl. She was hunted down, was kidnapped, spirited away to a demon dimension, tried to exonerate herself from the inevitable grip, but the chase was furious with a flurry of beats, as if she was waging a battle against a pack of wild dogs. The poor girl, who had suffered enough, had her in his clutches, gripped her more tightly, stared down at her with insatiable bloodlust, savagely entered her mind, and closed the door behind him. End poem.
Wow, if that doesn't rip your guts out and punch you in the face, I don't know what will. That was just truly an emotional poem filled with demons and innocence, and the latter being stolen by the prior. Just a haunting poem. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, this is certainly dark and creepy and haunting. And I like how it tells a dark tale about how oftentimes ghosts are trapped upon this world because of acts of violence that happen to them. It's particularly haunting, given that it involves the taking of a child by a dark entity. So, and on a technical level, it flows really nicely, and Laurent did a wonderful read.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. And Bobby, what did you think?
A very chilling piece, somewhat reminiscent for me. Of course, my mind always clings to references to films. It reminded me a bit of The Exorcist. But very spellbinding in the way it was written, and definitely appropriate to the occasion. For as short as it was, quite a gut punch.
Absolutely, yes. I agree. Thank you, Bobby. And Thomas, what did you think?
Well, first, let me tell you, Laurent, your voice was just right, smoky and kind of haunting. This, to me, hit certain strokes that elicit fear no matter what, especially now that you look at England and they're talking about all these women who are getting spiked in drinks and being knocked unconscious and stolen away to rooms and raped. And it's really horrifying what's going on. But he catches that sense of loss of control, doom no matter what you do, and someone just consuming you. And those things are frightening, terrifying to me. And he captures them really well without having to overplay it. He gives you just enough to get your mind thinking, and then he goes on to the next step. That's the reason he can pack all this into really tight, basically 16 lines. Impressive. Very well done.
Well said. Thank you, Thomas. Okay, Bobby, I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Not a bit. Okay. Let me tee it up here. We have a gem that loses breath out of water is like a woman abused. Oh, my goodness. I don't think I've ever read anything with a title quite that long. This is by Paralyzed Fox. A gem that loses breath out of water is like a woman abused. Ladies are gems in an ocean of selfish men. Each day, the water becomes calmer. For one by one, the women are picked for food. This appetite isn't fulfilling within the bare bellies of pigs, only in the poisoned eyes of disgusting perverts. So after she is plucked from the water, suffocation takes control. The air men breathe in is filled with chemical self-harm. They have no treat a woman. She needs utter respect, but they contain sin. So men break glass filled with elegant flowers and pour the vitamin-rich water all upon her. She's in harm, but still awake to fight.
Wow, that was a haunting poem, too. You know, you can see all this as she describes it. Their appetite, this appetite isn't fulfilling within the bare bellies of pigs, only in the poisoned eyes of disgusting pervert. Yeah, just a powerful, powerful, right? What did you think, Lawrence?
Well, I think this is not a little intense. This is a blow struck for women verbally, I think. There's much more to this than just a poem for the season. This is a woman who I think is, excuse me, this is a poet who I think may have been abused or recognized for some reason, the abuse that men can visit on women. I like the line that women are picked for food, emotional food, certainly, and yet that's never enough somehow for some men. They want to suffocate. They want to take complete control. You know, so the men break the glass, and she is in harm, but still awake, still alive enough, still willing to fight. Very strong piece.
Absolutely, yes, thank you. And Thomas, what did you think?
I'm a reminder of the news. This incredibly intense piece. But Tony Romo said after Tom Brady gave away, you know, hit the football with his 600th pass reception for a touchdown, was given away, and they went to get it back. And Tony Romo goes, well, they should just tell the guy that he can have a date with Tom Brady's wife, you know, because that's what he should do, you know, just offer up his wife. And he said it several times, and it just so objectified the woman and made it sound like she somehow was owned by Tom Brady, this stunning, intelligent woman who's a model and quite a presence in her own right, had somehow been reduced to something you bought off a football for. And it was just so disgusting to hear. And I was not surprised to see the following day, because I watched the game, when somebody just really took him to task and basically told him what a pig he was. And it's that attitude, and she speaks to that attitude so well, that has to be destroyed in this society, because that kind of reducing any human being to an object is just wrong. I'm going to stop there before I get on my soapbox any higher.
No problem. Thank you, Thomas. Great comment. I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please, Thomas.
No problem. Let me just go back and find it. Okay. By Charlie's Waiting. Tinkle Time by Charlie's Waking. Banging and clanging, a noise that scares. Something is creeping up my parlor stairs, moaning and groaning. I think it's a ghost. Just what I need. They scare me the most. It might be Grandpa. He died last year. It may be the old lady that used to live here. Doesn't really matter. Just please go away. I do hope that it has not come here to stay. There's a phantom that lives out in the shed, a poltergeist that's living right under my bed. A shadow man lives in the room next to mine, so I hope that the sounds are not a bad sign. But I'm visited by unwanted death. Oh, why can't these spirits remain at their rest? This is my house, and I don't want to be mean. But it's getting dark, and tonight's Halloween. So go away. Shoot, y'all go back to your grave. The children are coming, so don't misbehave. I bought candy and made popcorn balls, too. I'm wearing a sheet, and I practice my boo. If anyone here is going to make them pee, it won't be some old ghost. It's going to be me.
that was a fantastic read, Thomas. And that, such an engaging, right? You know, the...
This whole theme
to the right was fantastic, you know, of these ghosts showing up and them not wanting them to be there. And if anybody's going to scare the heck out of those kids, it's going to be them, not just some old ghost. I thought that was well done. What did you think, Pam?
I think the late night poets might be haunted tonight. But you know, I always enjoy Charlie's Waiting's writing, and the great rhyme and flow here. I love how this has the sense of humor to it of the father or the grandfather, you know, wanting to be the one to scare the children, and how it's all about, you know, the grandpa. I do like it that it's about, you know, it's got the nostalgic feel to it, where, you know, the fear is all about having fun, and I like that there's the popcorn balls and the candy, and, you know, where the end where it says, I'm wearing a sheet and I've practiced my boo. If anyone here is going to make them go pee, it won't be some old ghost. It's going to be me. That's just awesome. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, what did you think?
I really liked this, especially the title, Tinkle Time. I wasn't quite sure at the beginning what that meant, but something about that first stanza, banging and clanging, a noise that scares, something is creeping up my parlor stairs, moaning and groaning, I think it's a ghost, just what I need, they scare me the most. I mean, it could have been Jacob Marley coming up those stairs with the traditional banging and clanging. So, you know, what are we in for, a typical ghost story? But no, because all of a sudden he leavens it slightly with Grandpa, the old lady, please go away, all right, so he's not completely terrified. And then he goes into the phantom that lives out of the shed and the other things that he notices that might indeed terrify. But he removes all of that with those last stanzas. So go away, shoo, y'all go back to your grave. And then, of course, the last two lines jumps right back to the title in a way that it's going to make you smile. For anyone here, it's going to make him go pee. Maybe some old ghost is going to be me. So I enjoyed the levity mixed with the dark. It worked out tremendously.
Great comment. Thank you, Lauren. And Bobby, what did you think?
I enjoyed the wry humor in this. This is very adult humor. I like the fact that he's woven humor in with Halloween fear and scaring. It has a delightful ring to it. It's kind of like when you put the mask on and you frighten the kids and you lift the mask up and wink at them and they realize it's you. So the poem was like winking at us. it was delightful. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Great comment. Thank you, Bobby. And Thomas, what did you think of the write that you read?
Well, Bobby just said everything I could possibly say that would about this poem. I'll have to accept that she somehow come to inhabit in my mind and eat my brain. All can be possible. I mean, this had me laughing almost from the start because he overplays the banging and clanging and moaning and groaning to the point where, you know, it's already not scary. But it's the idea that all these things are normal and natural and everyday things that he deals with. And he just wants them all to go away because this is one night when it's all about kids and having fun. And he doesn't want kids to screw up his life. That's great. I had to laugh.
Well said. Thank you, Thomas. Okay, I have the next right here. This is by Wayne Leon Lemond. Awakened are the mighty dead. Within the silence, movements come just out of range of a viewing eye. I think I heard a cry. A sigh? Could just be imagination. and within the cold, dark, deepest night, a ruffle of the blanket out of sight, caught in a dream that I could not fight, the fear and trepidation. For as I lay, in seeks and comes, ethereal it roams, to choose the one who it will haunt, as the setting sun begins its manifestation, an entity, dark, not of this world, so dark, impure. My heart was filled with fear and dread. My heart was filled. I pray for my salvation. Yet prayers, they fall on God's deaf ears, as the dead of night heightens my fears. The banging on the bedroom door brings tears and closer to my annihilation. And so I shake alone in bed, for awakened are the mighty dead that will haunt me to my dying breath as the bedroom door creaks open. And boom. I really like that. That was engaging and fun. You can feel the trepidation and the fear in these lines. Within the silence, movements come just out of range of a viewing eye. I think I heard a cry, a sigh. Could just be imagination. Or is it ghosts coming to life? Wow. That was great. What did you think, Pam?
I thought this is a wonderful, creepy, dark light. I like the first-person narrative and how a lot of it's about the psychological darkness of hearing the cry, of feeling the dark entity there. I really like the banging on the bedroom door brings tears and closer to my annihilation, so I shake alone in bed, for awakened are the mighty dead. I like that it depends a lot on the sounds, like the knocking and the creaking and the banging, and that it ends with the door, the word open, the door creaks open, and then exclamation. And it just leaves you hanging with suspense of what's going to happen next. That is very cool.
Thank you, Pam. And Lauren, what did you think?
I love this piece. It takes its time creating a real atmosphere of dark, a real atmosphere of terror. And within the cold dark of this night, a ruffle of the blankets out of sight, caught in a dream, and I could not fight the fear and trepidation. And then, of course, he's laying in bed, and it seeks and comes. You know, when we're in bed, we're almost at our most helpless. We're laying down, we're sleepy, yet we have the covers to pull over our heads. Yet it's not going to work here, because of the entity that he describes, not of this world, so dark and pure. I like the rhyming carried from stanza to stanza. It's quite effective. His phrasing is quite excellent. And, you know, the door creaking open when it shouldn't at the end is really it's not a new way of finishing, but the way he writes it makes it seem very, very fresh. As the bedroom door creaks open. Well done.
Well said. Thank you, Lauren. And Bobby, what did you think?
Oh, I thought this was a very powerful light. I can't help it. It reminds me of Shirley Jackson's The Haunting of Hill House, because what terrifies you is what you cannot see, or it's just out of eye shot. You catch something in the corner of your eye. You see a movement. You hear a sound. There's no ectoplasmic manifestations in front of you. It's just the little hints of what you barely see, of what's there. The entity dark, not of this world, so impure. My heart was filled with fear and dread. I pray for my salvation. You can feel it. It's primordial, but you can't see it. And that, I think, is the most chilling of all night terrors. And I think it's very well written.
Well said. Thank you, Bobby. And Thomas, what did you think?
Oh, he's done something that I think is difficult to do in print, which is create a visual and emotional piece. And he does it in a nice, gradual, almost Hitchcockian, like Albert Hitchcock, you know, where he plays with your sense of dread, your sense of what these sounds might mean, and while noting that his own discomfort, fear, and trepidation is growing, he isn't spending so much time on himself as he is talking about the things that it might be, the creeping that's coming. I thought that he developed it really, really smoothly, and it's a real nice psychological, frightening little piece. Kind of thing you want to read your kids late at night.
Yeah.
When the trees are scratching against the windows.
Right, exactly. Thank you, Thomas. That was a wonderful comment. Okay, Pam, I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
All right. And here we go. All right. The Witching Hour by David Meyerhoff. And it goes like this. I passed the block many times on my way to town or just for a walk, not knowing what lay at the top of the street. At night, the mystery deepened with all manner of shadow gracing the air around the landfill. No house nearby, just a conduit from here to there, and no paths for cars, the go-between for walkers. Curious how all passerby showed no curiosity except, of course, for me. One night I let it get the best of me and sauntered up the street, now empty, before locked houses and flickering street lamps. I approached this nether world of the unknown with nothing out of place on the first glance. Then my scalp hair stood on edge. Could have sworn a shadow was drinking from a whiskey bottle. Then a bat flew by and the wind began singing in chorus. Doubtless a rational explanation exists, I told myself, as I quickened my pace away from the spot, lest I go bald before my fears consume me. End poem.
Well, that was a great read, Pam. And this is an engaging, right? You can take this walk with them and see all this as it happens. And how spooky would it be when the shadow was drinking from a whiskey bottle and a bat flew by and the wind began singing in chorus. Yeah, it was an epic, right? What did you think, Lauren?
The Witching Hour is a very convincing little piece. It examines partially, I think, the fact that some guys just can't avoid walking into darkness where no one in his right mind is going to walk. We see that in movies all the time. Well, what was that mysterious howling I heard? Well, let's go check it out. Now, the prompt, here a dead man sat to sip the sup in his hand, a drinking cup, is a great little prompt, and he addresses it quite nicely in the penultimate stanza. Then my scalp hairs stood on edge. Could have sworn a shadow was drinking from a whiskey bottle. But, you know, the very last stanza, did they quicken my pace away from the spot, lest I go bald before my fears consuming, stopped me for a moment. I couldn't figure out, go bald, why? And then back up to the stanza previous, then my scalp hairs stood on edge. So the very idea of being so scared that your hair is squirming, not only squirming, but fleeing your scalp, I thought was very nice. It just I don't know, a little bit of perhaps unintentional humor. I guess it depends on how you take it. Either way, well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Lauren. And Bobby, what did you think?
I thought this was wonderfully descriptive, seasonal write. Great storytelling here. It's very engaging, gets you right from the beginning, draws you in, and keeps you engaged and captivated right until the end, lest I go bald before my fears consume me. I agree, a little light touch of black humor there, which is artfully applied, but altogether a very engaging piece.
Great comment, Bobby. Thank you. And Thomas, what did you think?
For me, this is one of those, I never expected this to happen to me, but, oh, there it is, you know, kind of poems, which are tricky to do, and he pulls it off in a masterful fashion, and I like the touch of humor, excuse me, in the last two lines where he goes, lest I go bald before my fears consume me. But he does it very nicely, you know, never quite giving in to, oh, it was really scary. But the way that it kind of sneaks up on you when you least expect it is done really well in this piece.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Thomas. And Pam, what did you think?
I thought this was a wonderful ghost tale. I like how it almost had like a Twilight Zone type of vibe to it. Really clever storytelling all the way through and very well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. Okay, I have the next write-up, Laurent, and this is by Liquid Mind Forever, and she says, it's a performance piece, needs to be read by a man in a slow voice. So if you wouldn't mind, please.
No problem at all. I like the direction. This is called The Stonemason. Ah, sweet darkness surrounds me. Night swallows me. The stonemason comes. I hear him chipping away at the ancient ruins where I lie silent, cold in blackness. To what purpose do you taunt me, stonemason? To expose me to some woe-begotten time? To tempt me with some unrecognizable beauty I cannot dismember? Stop. 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 You torture me, shipping mercilessly. You cut, cutting and cutting into the soft underbelly of my darkness. Above ground, disguised, you come like a bloodsucker, sniffing, cutting, chipping away the layers of cankered death, lusting for some scent, some ancient memory, some distant hope, or shroud of tyranny. Through the stench of dried feces, ears fester with urinations steaming. You come here digging in my darkness for hard-shelled answers to unaskable questions that only the dank, dark, rancid stillness knows. Slithering shadows of light drip, shivering reminders of ancient hatred, ugliness so unforgettably buried, eons ago, somewhere, before time and worlds began. No, darkness, deliver me from this evil. Black clouds exhale, extrusions exposing shadows of an earlier day betray my shelter. Hear the growl of hungry bellies. Light workers scouring the earth search for anything to give meaning and purpose to their tortured minds, trying to forget. Their rotting hardness, their scarred underbellies. I feel terror dripping from above ground, forcing me down under the sepulcher of night. Oh, how I love to suckle at the sweet breast of silence. Damn you, blood-sucking scavengers of my night. I can smell you coming. Well then, come. Come closer if you dare. Look deeper, deeper into the mouth of darkness. Here, where only I cannot die, but irreverently lie, invitingly lighting the pathway in, all the way in, into damnation's abyss of madness. Empire.
Wow, you did a brilliant read on that, Lawrence. Excellent job. Total animation there. You brought it to the piece to life with your read. Yeah, what a haunting write this is about darkness and insanity and the abyss. Just a haunting, haunting write. You come here digging my darkness for hard-shelled answers to unaskable questions that only the dank, dark, rancid stillness knows. Just a brutal, right? What did you think, Bobby?
Oh, this is a superb write. Absolutely epic. The storytelling is incredible. It is definitely a performance piece. I think we had shades of Vincent Price here tonight. Beautiful storytelling from start to finish. Great language. I would run out of superlatives before I could finish commenting on this own stuff now.
Thank you, Bobby. And Thomas, what did you think?
Well, I like the reverse, how this is sort of the reverse of like the Cask of Amarado, where he's walling somebody in permanently into the darkness. Or Bobby wrote a poem not too long ago about somebody being locked into a room and left. This is the reverse, where someone, a beast perhaps from a deep, dark past is waiting for all the world to end so they can feast upon things, and being bothered because some other creature, some other godlet is coming. This stonemason chipping mercilessly, you cutting into the soft underbelly of my darkness. And then she plays with all the ways that the creature, our creatures of darkness, lie in wait for when those light workers scouring in the earth, searching for anything to give meaning and purpose to their tortured minds, trying to forget. And saying that they'll make sure you remember because they'll draw you back into the darkness. That it's really beautifully creepy, and there's a real sense of horror in this that's almost immutable, unavoidable, and no matter what you do, in the end, it wins. Kind of darkness. That's really great, really, really well done.
Great comment, thank you, Thomas. And Pam, what did you think?
Well, first of all, Lauren did a wonderful read of that. I really like how she utilizes spacing within this, and then I like how dark and creepy it is. Above ground disguised, you come like a bloodsucker, sniffing, cutting, chopping away layers of cankered death. I like how she plays with the placing of the words, like stretching out, slithering, and making drip go down. And I really like this. These lines, oh darkness, deliver me from this evil black clouds, exhale, extrusions, exposing shadows of an earlier day, betray my shelter, hear the growl of hungry bellies. Just a powerful and emotive dark lines, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And I'd like to welcome Frank to the show. Hello, Frank.
Hello. Hello there, my friends. It's good to be on.
I'm
having issues, unfortunately, with the phone. So what I will be able to do is comment on the poems and stay as long as I can.
Sure. That's great. Thank you. Did you get a chance to hear Lauren read?
I was only able to hear the last, I think the last poems are there. But I have to agree, if I heard more of the comments there, and I do agree with what was said. I think, first of all, she's a tremendous poetess. I've had her before in numerous contests. And I think that Laurent did a fabulous job there of reciting this poem. And he, I would say his intuition was Shakespearean, indeed.
Great comment. Thank you, Frank. And Lord, what did you think of the rite that you read?
It's highly impressive, obviously. She once performed this to no small acclaim, and folks asked her if this was a piece that was inspired by Shakespeare, and she allowed us how it was. Her structure is not reminiscent of Shakespeare, perhaps. I thought it was very inventive, very creative, at every point set up to emphasize or perhaps de-emphasize some portion of this particular piece, to choose the stonemason who purportedly simply inquires your name and any last words that you wanted on the tombstone, and yet is treated as an invader. And one assumes from the language that this person has been buried for some time, at least I thought so. Through the stench of dried feces, years fester with urinations steaming. And then he comes here, so I'm wondering if it's a stonemason or a grave robber, perhaps. But there are other reasons why somebody would come. There is a stanza, if I can find it, which has to do with, oh, above ground, disguised, you come like a bloodsucker, sniffing, cutting, chipping away the layers of cankered death, lusting for some scent, some ancient memory, some distant hope or shroud of Turin, some evidence that Jesus existed as a man or as the Son of God. Either way, looking for hope, and she answers that hope with a warning, the warning that she can smell you coming, you know, and daring you to look deeper into the mouth of darkness, where she is and who cannot die, but perhaps a warning to others who will, if they dare enter into the damnation's abyss of madness. Wonderfully written piece.
Absolutely, yes. Thank you, Lord. Okay, Bobby, I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Absolutely not. Find my tab here. And we have that up. Possessed by Asama Chiba. With words, she paints the color of wind, the howl of gales, and the dripping rain. Feelings of loneliness, sadness, madness, pouring emotions in a blue place. Possessed with illusory thoughts, trapped within the corridors of the brain, living like a ghost, crumbling on tombstones, climbing the cliff of memories, dwelling in old ruins. End poem. And the quote, the prompt that she used, I am a ghost living in ethereal thoughts.
Wonderful, wonderful read, Bobby, and thank you for sharing the AN. But no, she did a beautiful job with this. You know, with words she paints the color of the wind, the howl of gales, and the dripping rain, feelings of loneliness, sadness, madness, pouring emotions in a blue place. Just an epic, right, I thought. What did you think, Lauren?
Well, you're absolutely right. It's a brevity, but it's an epic rite. It's an epic brevity. She married the image so well to her words, the color of wind, the howl of gales, the dripping rain. She postulates herself a ghost, living like a ghost, crumbling on tombstones, climbing the cliff of memories, dwelling in old ruins. A wonderful metaphor to use, perfect for the brevity and very powerful. Excellent, excellent piece.
Thank you, Lord. And Thomas, what did you think?
I agree. She takes a metaphor, and before she greets us with it in terms of a sense of self, she takes the painting and paints it out so that in a language that tells us that this is a terrible place, feelings of loneliness, sadness, madness, pouring emotions in a blue place. possessed with illusionary haunting thought trapped within the corridors of the brain. And then that final metaphor where she goes, living like a ghost, crumbling on tombstones, climbing the cliff of memory, dwelling in old ruins. You are completely caught in this picture of a self that is slowly losing its place in reality. I just thought it was stunning. Very, very well done in another quick 16 lines.
Absolutely, yes. Thank you, Thomas. And Frank, what did you think?
Right. I have to agree. This is, although it's a brevity, it does seem very intense, very powerful. The imagery here, to me, is what drew me in. And I think if I'm out of a wonderful way of utilizing her metaphors. And the very, it's very compact, the poem, but it's very much, very effective the way she uses and utilizes the structure of the poem, all those metaphors, and to allow it to flow nicely in the poem. And to me, it almost seemed that it's just like a wandering ghost, seeing its visage and seeing how it has to cope with the fact that it is a ghost, or someone who feels to that point in life where they actually feel that they are possessed of a ghost. So it's a very powerful poem. I have to say that she does entertain us with the realm of the supernatural.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Frank. And Pam, did you get a chance to hear the poem?
I did not. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. Lord, what did you think of the poem?
I believe I already responded, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I've got the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please, Thomas.
Okay. Let's see. Frightful Night by Poeta de Cabra. 'Twas dark, eerie, and the skies were smoking. Could hear the rusty gates of hell slowly open. Reaper, ghosts, and ghouls about to cause havoc. Walking Dead were causing the town folks to panic. Men trying to fight them off, women dying of fright, seeing devil's disciples were in for a hell of a night. Axes and knives, men were cutting ghouls in half, but they just smile and let out an hysterical laugh. Town folks could see they were in terrible strife. Only thing they could do was run for their life. Reaper just sliced open the strong and the brave whilst in the cemetery. Soul danced on a grave. Ravens seen in the dim light, as were the bats. Dogs were howling and scared stiff were the cats. Virgins running from vampires, twisting and ducking, none wanting to be victims to the violent blood sucking. Thunder and lightning bad, wind and rain lashing, people running, trains, cars, and buses crashing, town folks trying to hide, looking for cover. If one died, ghouls would high-five each other. Then, suddenly a big crash, all went completely quiet. Was the end of the chaos and end of the riot? Place like a war zone, bodies all over were found. At least Reaper and friends were back underground. Many people were injured or had lost their life at the hands of vampires and a reaper's scythe. Priests came forward, followed them, who was boss, came forth with a wooden stake and also a cross. end poem.
That was a great read, Thomas. And, you know, this is an engaging, right? You know, it pulls you in right from the beginning. "It was dark and eerie and the skies were smoking. You could hear rusty gates of hell slowly open. Reaper ghosts and ghouls about to cause havoc. Walking dead were causing the townfolk. Townsfolk panic." Yeah, that was an epic write as well. It had a beautiful storyline to it. Well, I mean, not beautiful, but engaging for sure. But yeah, it was definitely an epic write. What did you think, Pam?
I have to agree. It was an epic write. I like how it told a storyline. It was dark and creepy. I really liked the one where just townsfolk could see they were in terrible strife. The only thing they could do was run for their life. And then, you know, was also a really great one. So just excellent dark write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Lauren, what did you think?
Wow, this poem was a literal waterfall of dark imagery, leaving absolutely nothing of darkness out of this epic Halloween piece. I mean, it's a true devil's night, expressed with great vigor. Yep, the waters are calmed through the wooden stake and cross, one for the soul, the other for a dark heart. I thought it was a nice, nice, nice shivery tale.
Well said. Thank you, Lauren. And Bobby, what did you think?
It was definitely an inventory of dark caricatures or characters for a seasonal rite. Quite a bit of wonderful storytelling here, and a great visual imagery. I mean, there was a lot going on in this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Bobby. And Thomas, what did you think?
This is one of those, to me, just magnificent moments of let it all hang out. Let's just say that every ghoul, ghost, and baddie that rode could possibly rise from a grave rose and took over the town and caused havoc and bloodshed all around. And he really did. He just, you know, opened the doors of hell and let it all come forth. I like the ending where he brought the force of light and the priest came forward, showed them all who was boss, came forth with a wooden stake and also a cross. Just sort of nice finish. No wasted words, but gloriously scary fun all the way up until that. Very well done.
Thank you, Thomas. And Frank, what did you think?
Yes, I thought it was a fabulous narrative. From the beginning, you know, he brings us in with the description of the dark, eerie, the skies were smoking. This whole notion had an apocalyptic feeling, but it was a type of dark piece that I would say was very much entertaining. You know, he brought us in the metaphors from the beginning, and he brought in just the whole notion there of what ghouls and demons and all of this that come out of, I would say, Hades to some extent, or the hellfire, what they would be like, you know, just conjure those images there. It makes this poem even more haunting. It's a fabulous display of brilliant, I would say, brilliant writing of dark pieces. I believe this is his first piece that I would say that I've actually heard him, actually not heard him, but actually write a dark piece of this nature here. Usually I use most to his other types of poems there.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Frank. Okay, Lawrence, I have your piece up and you're ready.
All righty. This is called Am I Frankenstein? And it was, I'm not sure what prompt was other than dark. Okay. In what ancient copse, read the revenant, gasping, breath of frosted fire floating above pain-filled, amazed eyes. Orbs of buttercup yellow, brittle, brimming, threatening seizure at the very beginning of the second act, an extended curtain call to life. Blink away the effluvium, the scattershot call that cakes with the dirt of your thrashing as you give birth to yourself. Dimensionless was the womb, fractured the split that passed you, invisible, the seed into red earth, sprung, fully flowered, and rootless. For there were demons, and angels fled, flaming into mists that boiled and heaved like a witch's clouded cauldron. You were the eye of Newt, sparrow's wing, frog tongue, and falcon claws, with a magical blue brew that bore you out from the dead. Evil-smelling herbs, zest of foul nights, the rough seasoning to this amniotic concoction of reawakening. Where then is the mad scientist who grave-robbed me? Am I Frankenstein, stapled and sewn, or a dropping from some heavenly dove sent by a capricious god in mockery of this season of masks? Concealed, nothing revealed, all the while exposed and unclothed, dichotomy feeling like Deuteronomy, an exhortation to obedience. Too real for laughter, not for hysteria, mad as a hatter, lost as Alice, fit for what and how and when, I know not, nor my name. So, quiet at last, I die again, light failing at the end of day, closing curtain on a dark stage of a sold-out but silent house. End poem.
Wow, that was an epic, right, Mark? And just a beautiful read to that as well. But, you know, your descriptive power in this is just amazing. You can bring the reader right into the words and have them take effect around them. Just a beautiful, right? Excellent job, Lauren. What did you think, Dan?
I'm sorry, did you say my name?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I thought this was amazing. The imagery is dark. It's visceral. I really like how there's this sense of magic and evil, of feeling like you're made of all these little parts of the devastation that has happened to you. And I really like evil-smelling herbs, zest of foul night, the rough seasoning to this amniotic concoction of reawakening, and where then is the mad scientist who grave-robbed me? The kind of feeling like the monster, I like that thought there. I think this was just a really strong write all the way through and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Thank you, Pam. And Bobby, what did you think?
This is superb. Great storytelling, wonderfully constructed metaphors, great visual imagery, and a really impressive vocabulary. Really draws, the storytelling draws the reader in and keeps them there.
Great comment. Thank you, Bobby. And Thomas, what did you think?
I have to hand it to you, Ryan. You did a great job of creating a sense of the evilness of creating a beast like this. Of evil-smelling herbs, zest of foul nights, or you were the eye of the newt, sparrow's wing, frog tongue, and falcon claws of the magical. But at the same time, you come down at the very end and you greet us with a sort of innocence of the monster. Which is something I always liked about Shelley's description of Frankenstein, was that certain innocence. Too real for laughter, not for hysteria, mad as a hatter, lost as Alice, fit for what and how and when, I know not, nor my name. So quiet at last, I die again. That's just lovely. That just takes the whole thing and brings it to a close that almost, if not successfully, makes the reader feel that the wrong was done twice. Once to the public to have to see the monster, and once again to the monster himself, who never wanted to be created in the first place. Beautifully done. Very well said.
Thank you, my friend.
Great comment, Thomas. And Frank, what did you think?
Well, first of all, I have to say this was most definitely an epic poem, an epic ride. You just really... We did justice to Shelley here. The imagery, I agree with Bobby said, was remarkable. I like the analogy of Thomas there, but he said of how we can be a god on one hand and yet be so indifferent to our creation. And it was almost that feeling with the creator and Frankenstein himself. I just thought what I really did enjoy was the fact how you described, personified, I would say, the monster, if you could call him that, and how you made him to a certain extent human, you know, with compassion, with remembrance, with just giving us that image there of, you know, I know not, nor my name, then you end that in that last stanza there with... quiet at last, I die again. You know, it's it is quite a remarkable thing when we think about how precious creation is, how much we talk about playing you know, the creator. You know, in that image that you brought us in the end, just made us think about how powerful death can be, equally how powerful birth can be. You know, it's one of these types of poems that, you know, you could easily just be mesmerized by, first of all, his reading is always great, but his writing is even more great. I really, really was touched by this piece here with, I would say, with the depth and the display of the storyline that you presented here with this poem.
Thank you, Frank.
Excellent comment. Thank you, Frank. And Laura, would you like to say anything about your write?
Well, the prompt, I'm as mad as the Hatter and lost as Alice, was the starting point for this. And I had imagined an individual, not necessarily Frankenstein, but an individual waking up, realizing that he had been reborn, and was obviously terrified of what was going on. And then had to somehow come to grips with his current state somewhere between death and another death, if you will. I tried to communicate that sense of terror that someone in that situation might experience, and being familiar with the story of Frankenstein as everyone is, he asks, am I Frankenstein? Am I another Frankenstein? Am I literally an individual who would fit into the story of Frankenstein? Or am I simply something a capricious god in mockery decided to visit on me? More than that, the reader will have to extrapolate, but it's almost like a performance of life finishing on a dark stage of a sold-out silent house. At least that's the way I was going with it. Thank you.
That was a great comment. Thank you, Lawrence. Okay, Bobby, I have your write-up whenever you're ready.
Oh, all righty. Oh, I put the vignette up there because that was only three. This is 800 words. Do you mind?
No. Go ahead.
This is kind of long. Okay, all right, because I've got a shorter version. All right. This got a SoundCloud, actually, if you want to. Can you pull that up?
No, I'm sorry, I can't.
No, that's all right. That's all right. I'm an adult. I'm used to hearing the word no. The immurement. This was inspired by Poe, Cask of Amontillado. Nemo me impune lacessit. No one attacks me with impunity. Edgar Allan Poe. After unbinding his wrists, a voice whispered something in his ear, and as a hand in the middle of his back shoved him into the void, a door closed. Falling forward, he heard the door slam. He reached for his face and removed the blindfold, and as he slowly opened his eyes, he could see nothing. Though certain he had removed the blindfold, he again reached for his face. His hand swept past his unencumbered eyes. Still, there was only blackness. He stood slowly, reaching forward and to either side. His fingertips met with no structure, no barrier, no obstacle. Emptiness, unrelenting and absolute. He could feel nothing. His ears could detect only his own breathing and the deafening roar of silence about him, enveloping him like a heavy woolen blanket. Still, he listened intently and could hear nothing. Tentatively, gingerly, as he slid his feet forward, his hands groped for anything solid, and his fingers met with a cold, rough surface. Placing his palm on it, he had located one of the limits of his confinement. Strangely comforting, he placed his back against the expanse, let his body slide down the length of its rough surface, seating himself on the chilly floor. And as he looked and listened intently, he could detect nothing. At this moment, he would have given all for a sliver of light or the merest suggestion of a sound. But this diabolical cocoon offered neither. And as hungry as his senses were for stimulus, there was nothing. His mind struggled to grasp the incomprehensible situation. Faintly, vaguely, vainly, he called out, asking if there was anyone there. But there was no answer. There was no echo or residual sound. There was only nothing. Breathing quickened and heartbeat raced as the enormity of his plight seeped into his senses, and he tried to wrap his mind around the events that had led him to that moment. A sudden hand over his face, a descent into blackness, awakening masked and immobilized. The only thing crystal clear was his helplessness. There was a cool dankness to the surroundings, a distinct muskiness to the air that suggested somewhere deeply subterranean, quiet, hidden. The boundless blackness was at once both terrifying and soothing, and his weary, bewildered mind succumbed to the palliative embrace of the darkness. He awoke with a start, not certain of why. He had no notion of the passing of time. As he struggled to focus, he became aware of a glow emanating from somewhere before him. As he crawled toward the light, he recognized its source. The light came from an old mobile phone. And as his eyes adjusted to the light, he gasped. He could see a message displayed on the screen. As he read the message, a wave of dread engulfed him. At that moment, all was revealed to him. He understood where he was and why. The wave of dread became an icy flood of panic. He stared in abject horror at the words on the screen, knowing that in seeking justice, his captor's choice of retribution, much like his exaggerated grievances, would represent what he believed to be equal in its extreme. As the light from the telephone's tiny screen began to fade, burned on his retina was the same message whispered in his ear by his captor as final torment, the words, Nemo me impune lacessit, and he wept silently as he felt the limitless pitch darkness swallow his soul. End poem.
Wow, that was an epic, right? And a fabulous read, Bobby. That quote, no one attacks me with impunity, you know, I thought it was just fabulous, right? Just dark, dank, depressing, and, you know, sorrowful for sure. Just masterful, right, Bobby? Masterful. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I thought this was excellent dark storytelling. I like how she took and was inspired by the classic pole story, the cask of Montero, and that you gave it, Bobby, a more like up-to-date feel, like especially with the dying of the phone light at the end. I really thought that was a nice touch, because to me that would be like if you were buried alive or behind a wall or anywhere, and your cell phone was your light, and the last light you'd ever see, there would definitely be an intensity of emotional and psychological fear that would add on to. And I like the line, he woke with a start, not certain of why, he had no notion of the passage of time. I think that's adding in the fact that he had no idea of the passage of time, I thought was another great attention to detail. So excellent writing and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Great comment. And Thomas, what did you think? Or sorry, Lauren, what did you think?
I love this. I think I read the shorter version and left a comment. But the thing about this is, little piece of history. Quakers invented solitary confinement because they thought the prisoners would immediately take the solitary idea and use it as a place of meditation and think about their past crimes, and in doing so heal themselves and turn to the light and become better people. Solitary confinement was ended because it was considered cruel and unusual punishment. You know, it's just interesting. And she takes this whole thing of the silence, the loss of light, the loss of any connection to anything, and just lets it slowly but surely creep into every crevice and every possibility. And then when she brings that last little bit of light from the phone, it just drives home the quote, or not the quote, but the Latin phrase, and the terrifying finality of all of that. I thought it was brilliant.
Thank you.
Great comment. Thank you, Thomas. And Frank, what did you think?
Well, first of all, I have to say that Bobby did an excellent job there. I certainly felt Poe's influence in this piece here. This was just remarkable. I mean, I thought Laurent's piece was remarkable. I think this was equally remarkable. You have, I mean, these two poems really just brought in, you know, the narrative of how you can be so, you know, so gripping, you know, so intense with imagery and words when it's properly given a good narrative, and both you and Laurent read perfectly. I could imagine what your SoundCloud would have been, but nevertheless, I felt that your reading was fabulous. I just thought this poem indeed just took me to those levels of what Thomas said about, you know, being there without light, solitude, you know, just grappling with the reality of, you know, of dying, the reality of, you know, which few of us ever think about, you know, being without breath, you know, being just, you know, seeing your world collapse to a certain extent, seeing it crumble, and perhaps not even for most of us, we're not prepared. And you bring the imagery here in the end, with that little notion there of light there, you know, yet he wept silently, and he felt a limitless pitch darkness while his soul. That's very convincing there. It's very, very telling there, that whole imagery there I could feel the factless, I would say, to a certain extent, his predicament there, and how he was unable, really, to cope to a certain extent with that, that troubling reality of was his, of what his finality, his expiration, was looming, how it must have felt to see those last seconds pass by you, that last breath, just that whole notion there of the journal, that really, it was very, very intense, this poem, and I think tonight's pieces were very apropos for the theme, and I thought this poem was great. Nemo meum pune, like I said.
That was a great comment. Thank you, Frank. And Lord, what did you think?
I really enjoyed this piece. At this moment, he would have given all for a sliver of light or the merest suggestion of a sound, but this diabolical cocoon offered neither, and as hungry as his senses were for stimulus, there was nothing. Bobby, you really communicate the absence of sensation very convincingly. I can think of nothing worse than the boundless darkness, as you say, of immurement, which in a way reminds me of an oubliette. The oubliette was a tiny vertical shaft, which is often only large enough for an individual to stand up in. They wouldn't have been able to crouch down to kneel to sit or even to turn around in it. And I captured that emotion, albeit bringing the piece to life by modernizing the poem with a telephone. That caught me unawares. It came right out of nowhere, but it worked. This is an outstanding dark ride.
Thank you.
Fabulous comment. Thank you, Laurent. Okay, Thomas, I have your piece up whenever you're ready.
Okay. This is not Halloween, but you may all enjoy it anyway. It's called Mud Dance. The sea susurrates between my toes. Sand crabs race the last trace of briny lace. I listen, feel you between my fingers. Wet sand runs back to the sea. Taste the last salty night. You slip away, half dream, half hope, all woman rich in the steamy act of creation. This land awash, magnificence a tremble. Brown colors, steel contrast, mud men storm dreams, hide in war and draw strength from hate. Women sensual, complete, caught in the rhythms, pulse of forever dance, need, want, met by love, lust and fires of the open flesh, seduces the last bastion, the mind. Spirit set free, sings from the mountains, mud man finds his rock, rolls it across the ground, luxuriates in his senses, being set fire by grasses, vines, the ever-calling love song of vegetation and dirt. He discovers a hole, a place for his rock, and so finds peace. The song of love needs more than mud. They need a man to bring his spirit and tender strength, savor the feast. Then, woman, set free, let the passions of her rivers race. Counterpoint to her love song, rhythm syncopate, passion builds on passion, graduations of togetherness increase, filled to a singular passion. Salty flavors linger in my throat. My princess spins upon her toes, and fingers trace the line of chin and lips. Draws me into the dance upon this earth, this sandy shore. I am washed by river's course, every cell unscarred, healed. New colors, peacock fan, spread about this man, born on the edge of skin and sky. I can only feed her gold, gleam from the edge of sun-frosted clouds. Pray that she joins me where the land quivers, settles against the sea, be washed into me.
Wow, that was an epic read and an epic break. I thought it was just fantastic imagery and sensuality and life and living it. And the justification between a man and a woman is woven in here as well. And then you bring it all together with, she joins me where the land quivers, settles against the sea, he washed into me. That is a beautiful job. Excellent, right, Thomas?
Thank you.
You bet. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is a wonderful, right, with a nice touch of sensuality. I like the use of the imagery. I like how it talks about how, you know, the men and women bringing something into a relationship. And just wonderful imagery, and I like that instance, especially with salty flavors going in my throat, like princess spins upon her toes and fingers trace the line of chin and lips. There's such a sense of a free spirit within those lines. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Lauren, what did you think?
I think that this piece sets kind of a marker for excellence in many ways. Mud Dance, you don't really know what to expect when you see the title, but we don't begin with mud. We begin with a sea, susurrating between my toes. Sand crabs race, last trace of briny lace. I like the alliteration in there, and all the way through, there's some phrasing with some delightful alliteration, but you take the sea where life began, in many ways, kind of a womb in which man grew. And what is man? Well, you stipulate mud men, storm dreams, hide in war, and draw strength from state, from hate. Women, sensual complete, caught in the rhythm's pulse of the forever dance, need, want. You show us the man who is perhaps not as subtle in his desires. He wants things in broad strokes. You know, as you say, he finds his rock, rolls it across the ground, luxuriates in its senses, it's set fire by grasses, vines, the ever calling love song of vegetation and dirt. Eventually, you know, he discovers a hole, which I'm going to assume is his grave, a place for his rock, and so finds peace. But, you know, you need more than the dirt of creation, the mud of creation. A man needs the same thing a woman needs in many ways, to bring his spirit and tender strength to savor the feast that is life. You do some wonderful things in this poem, Tom. The ending is exquisite, really. She joins me where the land quivers, settles against the sea. He washed into me, this combining, I think, of man and woman and the things that she needs that a man can offer her. A wonderful piece.
Great comment. Thank you, Lauren. And Bobby, what did you think?
I thought it was an appropriate piece to read after my depressing piece. I feel so much better now.
Right.
It was truly a dance. This is a beautiful ballet between man and woman, a sensuality, sensitivity, romance, a very ethereal, almost reminds me, and I'm not going to talk about a movie this time, how about that? It reminds me of Daphnis and Chloe by Ravel, and how the ethereal dance of the two characters finding each other and celebrating their love is just so lovely and beautiful. I really, really enjoyed this, and I've already tucked it away in my favorites.
Well, there you go. Frank, what did you think?
Well, I have to
say,
Thomas, you are. Yes, just bear with me here. Thomas, I have to say that this poem was an incredible writer. You are a very romantic fellow, and I would have to say that the poem was sensual, but it was beautiful. The way you describe the sensuality here, was just ethereal in a sense. It was a beauty there that really the way you incorporated there, the notion there of the sea, you know, in the mud. And of course, what Bobby was saying, you know, the way you brought in the aspect of love between the lovers there was very admirable. I really loved every line here. I think I can go on an hour with this poem because it really has that depth, you know, that excitement there. And I like, my favorite lines would have to be the ones with the songs of love leap more than mud. They need a man to bring his spirit in tender strength, save for the feast. This poem was exquisitely well written, exquisitely read, and I'm very envious of this poem there, Thomas. You brought in a piece, and the only thing I could think that was missing tonight was Lou. She would enjoy this piece.
Yeah.
Well. Great job.
Thanks, Frank.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Would you like to say anything about your rate, Thomas?
Well, it even though this is like 15 years old, this has always stood out for me. It came together from comments I made on other people's poems on another website over 3 or 4 poems, and I suddenly started reading some of the comments and realized they kind of went together, and I trimmed and I played and added the last verse, and voila, there it was. But I think you guys covered it really, really well in terms of the, I was just playing with the energy, as you might say, really more than anything else. There's the energy of those people, as Laurence described it, about the mud men and stuff, and then there's the energy of the people who truly make themselves available to all that love is, and that changes everything. And that probably is all I need to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful comment. Thank you, Thomas. Okay, Frank, I have your poem up, and I'm going to play that.
All right.
You are alone in your dark room at night, within the dungeon of your dormant quietude, fearing the nightmare of my ominous presence, when reality meets the guise of dream.
Hello?
Hello, I'm not sure what's happening there.
I don't know. I only heard the first time over there.
Yeah, I'm going to try every place.
We got static.
All right.
You are alone in your dark room at night, within the dungeon of your dormant quietude, fearing the nightmare of my ominous presence, when reality meets the guise of dreadful alterity. Every night you dream about me in your mind, pondering the moment I creep onto your bed, as you hear my breath in my evil laughter, but I hide stealthily in the shade of darkness. Thus, I pinch your toes and scratch your arms. I slowly pull your covers and crinkle your sheets. You awake past the midnight hour of dread, within the thick pool of your dripping perspiration. You can sense me and you know that I am there. But what drives you mad is the fact that I am in control. For I control your nightmares in the scenes of their terror. And what is worse, my friend, I'm never going away. You see, I enjoy the macabre delight of torturing poor souls, and I love the taste of blood in the sadistic game of horror, especially when I am the sole master of this wicked game, and you are the servant to my perverted pleasures. I enjoy the loud sound of your terrifying screams, the shaking of your body as you roll into a stiff ball, and you begin to fret and fret with the passing minute, biting your fingernails and your frightened eyes bulge. A strange figure emerges from the dark shuttle. Your heart beats faster and you cannot move, for the fear has stiffened your body completely. You close your eyes to then open them to discover a liquid pool of blood is nothing more than urine. In the poem.
Great laugh. Great
laugh. Well, yeah, that was an epic, right? You know, you guys all brought it tonight with your writes and your reads. Just amazing job, Frank. You know, how haunting is this throughout? You know, you can see this and you can feel it as you go through the, you can sense me and you know I'm there. But what drives you mad is the fact that I am in control, where I can control your nightmares and the scenes of their terror. And what is worse, my friend, I am never going away. Yeah, just haunting. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, I really like that. It's an excellent read. I like how you take it one action at a time. Like first, you know, there's the ominous presence and a wonderful use of language, like guise of dreadful alterity. And then the pinch of the toes, the scratch of the arms. And so there's this real buildup of fearful anticipation. And then I like a strange figure emerges from the dark shadows, your heart beats faster, and you cannot move for fear has stiffened your body completely. There really is just this morbid sense of loss of control emotionally and physically, and the way that fear completely takes over a person. So excellent, Dark Wright, and very well done.
Well, I appreciate that, Pam. Thank you very much there. And I had fun with this.
Yeah, sounds like it. Great job, Frank. Lauren, what did
you
think?
I appreciate that.
You bet.
Great read as always, Frank. I enjoyed this piece a great deal. It's skillfully written, and there's never any doubt that it would be. But I found you delivered you presented us with a morbid Morpheus, delivering the darkest of dreams, a violation of the body and spirit in truly horrific fashion. You see, I enjoy the macabre delight of torturing poor souls, and I love the taste of blood and the sadistic game of horror, especially when I am the sole master of this wicked game and you are the servant to my perverted pleasures. Somehow you managed to terrify so well in this poem that we reached a moment of an involuntary voiding of bodily fluids, blood turning the piss yellow of fear. You've captured helplessness quite well and the terror of a nightmare even better. Great piece.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Sarah. Thank you very much.
Great comment, Lord. Thank you. And Bobby, what did you think?
I think sometimes Frank is better than chocolate.
Great couple.
Great storytelling. Absolutely great storytelling. Visual imagery is superb, is top-notch. I mean, just draw the reader in immediately and engages them, I mean, inextricably, all the way to the, propels them all the way to the end. And I enjoy the loud sound of your terrifying screams, the shaking of your body as you roll into a stiff ball. And you begin to fret and fret with the passing minute, biting your fingernails. Again, just wonderful storytelling. Visual imagery is absolutely superb. I mean, you've just layered it so beautifully, just with little details, like I slowly pull your covers and crinkle your sheets. You awake past the midnight hour of dread. Within the thick pool of your dripping perspiration. Again, you've painted such a wonderfully vivid a portrait here this is on par, I think, with the piece that you were admiring of Laurence earlier. This is a superb write.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much, my dear.
Thank you, Bobby. And Frank, would you like to say anything about your pen?
Yes, I might have to go in after this, but I want to say that it was just a piece that was inspired. There was a prompt to this, but there's something that I enjoy most when I write dark pieces and I write horror is psychological terror. You know, we can always write about monsters and that's the easy part. But when you can draw someone in with psychological terror, that's the best type of horror. So this is what I
Absolutely.
Wanted to do with this piece here, encompass the whole notion of how our mind, you know, plays tricks on us and how the worst of all demons is lies within our own brain. So I wanted
yes.
to just bring up the issue of how our fears are manifested by our own, you know, imagery, you know, our own thoughts. And that's why, of course, I added midnight because it was just to add it on. But it was mostly there to, the poem was mostly just inspired by the whole notion of what psychological terror is and how it can affect us if we really just are so gullible to the extent that we fall prey to it, then it becomes, it starts eating us inside and it becomes even more intense, and this is the problem that we have. But it was just a poem that was inspired for entertainment as well. And with that, my friends, I do have to go. Great, it was a great show. Bobby, always a pleasure. Laurent as well. And
yeah.
Thomas, I don't know if you're still around. Pleasure, my friends. Take care. And buenas noches.
Good night, Frank.
Night, Frank.
Good night. Buenas noches. Okay, Pam, I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please. Oh, it's not working.
I would be happy to. And
if it works for you, it's not working for me.
Oh, okay. Well, it probably won't work for me either then. Nope, that one must have got deleted.
Yeah, okay. I'll grab the next one then. This is by Pam 8. Okay.
All right. Okay.
There we go.
A Reaper Madness by Pam 8, and it goes like this. Snakes coil and rising. Overhead, pinned down on my back, spirits messing around my bed. Ghosts of ones departed, ones who lost their way, accompanied the Reaper when he came for my soul that day. The scratchy black coat seemed to be covered in cobwebs, filthy with dust. His scythe was sharp and shiny, not a single speck of rust. Reaper floated on air toward the bed in front of me, ghosts of one stuck in between, stood at the foot of my fiery bed, while an ex-boyfriend that was killed the day before floated with snakes above my head. Once Reaper extended his bony hand to me without a moment to spare, I ran to my grandmother's in the middle of the night, and that overly zealous nut performed my exorcism there. And poem.
I like it. That was great. Fabulous read, Pam. But, you know, this is filled with excellent imagery, too, as well. Towards the bed in front of me, ghost of one stuck between. stood at the foot of my fiery bed, while an ex-boyfriend that was killed the day before floated with the snakes above my head. Yeah, just amazing imagery. What did you think, Lauren?
Well, she presents us with snakes, spirits, the goats, with ghosts, with a reaper when it came for my soul that day. The scratchy black coat seemed to be covered in cobwebs, filthy with dust. The image of an ex-boyfriend that was killed the day before, floating with snakes above my head, is truly a work of imagination. And as the reaper extends his bony hand to me, you know, she runs to her grandmother, and that overly zealous nut performed my exorcism there. So either she's being somewhat sarcastic about the overly zealous nut, who probably would not perform a real exorcism at that moment, but might still instead provide the exorcism that all grandmothers are capable of.
Absolutely.
Warm arms, a breast to lay your head on, a calm voice assuring you that it was all a dream, and I thought she handled that bit very skillfully. Great piece.
Wonderful comment, Laura. Thank you. And Bobby, what did you think?
Again, a great piece of a little bit of black humor threaded through here. A fun write, definitely dark, but not macabre. when he came from my soul, scratchy black coat seemed to be covered in cobwebs, filthy with dust. Wonderful visual imagery that, you know, it kind of reduces death to a scruffy, scraggly entity that needs to be vacuumed before he shows up. Really enjoyed the imagination in this. Very imaginative, very clever, right?
Well said. Thank you, Bobby. And Thomas, what did you think?
I like this. It's picking up on something Bobby pointed out about the spirit messing around my bed, ghosts of one departed, ones who lost their way. You know, when they came from my soul that day, this scratchy black coat seemed to be covered in dust and cobwebs. There's almost a innocence here, a little girl imagination. You know, I can imagine someone 14, 15 years old saying these things and having a boyfriend that was killed the day before fits perfectly into that kind of frightfulness and bad dreams and all the things that go on, and then to run to her grandmother who performed my exorcism there, and that's perfect. It just all fits together really nicely, and it's for all the fearfulness stuff in the beginning, you come away with a warm glow because there's someone there that loves you, and that's all that really matters in the end. Beautifully done piece. Delightful from start to finish.
Excellent comment. Thank you, Thomas. Okay, I have the next write-up. It's by R.S. Morris, and he has a SoundCloud.
This happens once a year, the date always unknown. There is a haunting in our woods where the trees are overgrown. There is that chill in the air. Nowhere is there moonlight. No stars are in the sky. There is a haunting tonight. It is summer outside, but the leaves have turned brown. Birds are no longer singing. Deer and squirrels are not around. There is a haunting tonight. Lights form a square in the trees. A piano plays a grand sonata. Violin moans in a sullen breeze. Whispering comes from the hill. Couple slow dances all aglow. Warm outside, but the air is chilled. piano switches to a slow rondo. There is a haunting tonight. No one would believe us anyway. We just hunker down and watch this surreal supernatural display. Morning is now approaching. Leaves are green, birds sing bright. Deer and squirrels prance about. There was a haunting last night.
Well, it was a great time, Cloud, and, you know, an interesting, right, of a haunting last night. And, you know, you can see all this as it happens. You know, it engages you from the beginning. This happened once a year. The date is always unknown. There's a haunting in our woods where the trees are overgrown. Just fantastic imagery woven in this piece. What did you think, Pam?
I really liked this. It had wonderful meter to the rhyme. I like how he had his that pause in the reading, which kind of added to the atmosphere. And what I like about this, something that I particularly like about this is the stanza, which is, there's a haunting tonight, and it mentions the birds are no longer singing, deer and squirrels are not around. Like, that's always one of the first signs that something is wrong, when the animals all grow quiet. I also liked where he mentioned the music, a piano played, a grand sonata, violin moans and sullen breeze. That was just a wonderful use of sound and imagery, and excellent write, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Lord, what did you think? Hello, Lauren?
Lauren had to go.
Oh, I see. Oh. Okay, thank you. And Bobby, what did you think?
I thought it was performed beautifully. The pauses, the emphasis, great storytelling, great vocabulary. You struck a vein of pure Halloween gold tonight.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks so much, Bobby. And Thomas, what did you think?
Well, I really enjoyed this. It's almost as if he was painting a picture in a whole lot of ways. That, and then bringing in the whole metaphor of the music just to me deepened the whole structure of the poem. And the use of that phrase, there is a haunting tonight, was built really carefully so that by the time you got to the end, it was totally full of meaning that it had never had at the very beginning. This was just a masterful piece and really nicely developed in the way the story was told within it. Deeply enjoyed it.
Thank you, Thomas. I appreciate your comment. Okay, Bobby, I have the next one up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Of course not. Okay. Supper's Ready by Bartle Batch. Okay. Dinah's the key, the mystery, an underworld, a private palace, chalice unknown. Who cries when finds these keeps? Who groans when it's not thine own? Do you think I am lovesick to a manor born, sworn to keep the secret told? Do you think I am treasure, twisted pleasure, bones of a haggard wolf, tongue of the toothless bold? Mold grows feral, blood grows steep, and the clock ticks down Winesy's flown. My tombstone creeps these slimesy, seeps in the rock and sticks to the unbeknown. The old scabbard beckons, ravens crow beneath on ether gravestone cold. Ghastly measures, parchment letters, lovers, slaves, and beggars, rags, corpses sold. But who cries from the haunted deep, what creeps these moan? Who weeps in the long dark hour, smother when finds these keeps, and the earth takes back thine own? sad song? Who steeps thy flesh and skin alive and blackened then in spidery shadows of my glistening glen? Honor grows bitter on cold and moonlight glows forever, but who pines for the lovesick widowers then? For thine is the kingdom and silver locket, the prosecution of perilous profit. Thine is the key to a skeleton's closet or spineless bosom of heaven's pocket, Chevy to the unbeknown. We wine, we dine with words of power and sustenance, supper and poe. End poem.
Thank you, Bobby. That was a wonderful read. And, you know, this is an engaging piece here. It pulls you through in the right. Thine is thy key, the mystery, the underworld, a private palace, chalice unknown. Who cries when finds his keep? Who groans when not thine own? You know, you can see all this as it happens, and it's wonderfully written. The old scabbard beckons, raven crows, breath on ether, gravestone cold, ghastly measures, parchment letters, lovers, slaves, and beggars' rags, corpses sold. You know, like, how haunting is this? What did you think, Pam?
This just goes...
Oops, sorry.
Sorry, it was Pam.
Okay, go Pam.
Yeah.
All right. It's hard to tell those three-letter names apart. I really liked this. It had wonderful imagery. It was dark, but at the same time, it was playful because there was kind of some wordplay, slimesy, that very much reminded me of Lewis Carroll. And I enjoyed that a lot. And I really liked For Thine is the Kingdom and Silver Locket, the Prosecution of Perilous Profit. Thine is the key to a settled in this closet.
We lost Pam. Okay, Bobby, what did you think?
I thought it was a very clever write. The author took the language and played with it and created words that almost had a childlike quality. And it reminded me, Pam, of Lewis Carroll, reminded me of Tolkien's character, Gollum, who in one instance is dark and destructive and murderous. But on the other hand, is almost pitiable and uses the language like creepsies and slimesies and calls the ring precious and talks to himself. It has that quality that dances between playfulness and darkness, almost on a razor's edge, which is, I think, an extremely a skillful light, and I really, really enjoyed the whole thing.
Thank you kindly, Bobby. That was a great comment. And Thomas, what did you think?
And there's some madness about this.
yeah.
And the playfulness becomes almost as if you're dealing with someone who has danced at the edge of darkness and tampered with the evilness that lives all about us for so long that they no longer quite function totally in the present or the past, but tend to wander all over the place as they try to get some sense of grace. But who cries from the haunted deep where creepsies moan? Who weeps in the long dark hours, smother when finds thee keep and the earth takes back thine own sad song? And yet at the same time, we wines, we dines with words of power and sustenance, supper and poe. I just, you know, I got this whole sense of someone who was really caught up in all the wild and crazy things that can go on in the world, but had been doing it for so long that they were no longer quite anchored in this reality. And so was both delighted and slightly terrified by what I was hearing. Pretty well done.
That was a great comment. Thank you, Thomas. All right. Well, I'd like to thank you both for calling in tonight and sharing your hearts, your minds, your voices, and most especially your time. So much love, everybody.
Night.
Good night. Great show.
Good night. Thank you for joining. Good night, you guys.